Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Negotiation Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Embley. And today, I welcome Tom Simpson, Managing Director of China Operations and China Chief Representative for the China-Britain Business Council, or the CBBC, one of the leading organizations supporting UK businesses in China and strengthening bilateral commercial ties. Tom joins the show to unpack Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's recent visit to China, the first by a UK leader in 8 years, and what it means for British businesses and UK-China relations. With deep expertise in bilateral trade and on-the-ground operations in China, Tom provides insider perspective on the specific outcomes of the trip, CBBC's role during the visit, and what comes next for UK companies navigating the Chinese market. From visa-free travel to tariff reductions, Tom walks through the concrete agreements reached and explores what they mean for different sectors of the UK economy. The conversation also addresses the ongoing challenges and opportunities UK businesses face in China and where the greatest potential lies for UK-China commercial cooperation in the years ahead. Enjoy.
A visit like this, you know Chinese culture and you know the way that the system works here. If you're not meeting with the top guy, you know, really the relationship is missing that sort of upper third, you know, that is all critical, really. And we can already feel, even just, you know, a week or so after the visit, the sense of kind of winds in our sails, you know, at our backs in terms of our partners and the people that we're speaking to on the Chinese side who are saying, well, okay, now the UK is very much back in the fold. Let's take forward any of the things that we would like to take forward with the UK, whether that's on sort of on the trade negotiation side, whether that's on delegations from China going to the UK, whether that's local governments looking at, okay, which countries should be prioritized working with this year on activity in China or overseas. It's very constructive from that standpoint.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Tom, welcome to the Negotiation Podcast.
Thank you, Todd. Great to be here.
Where does this podcast find you today?
So I'm in Beijing. It's a rather sort of chilly morning in Beijing, a few days ahead of Chinese New Year. Chinese New Year kicks off over the weekend, so everyone will be going away on holiday for a full sort of, I think, 8 days this year. And the Year of the Horse, obviously, is coming up, so everyone's kind of winding down a little bit, but getting last things ready ahead of the holiday.
The Year of the Ma. They're all going to get to sit around and watch the Olympics, I suppose.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Lucky them. Yeah. I'm not so fortunate. Listen, so to begin at a high level, give us a bit of the historical background, okay, to Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's visit. Why was this the first visit from a PM in 8 years? And then, how did it come about? Because we'll get into the details of the visit, but give us some background on it first.
Yeah, I think, you know, the 8 year issue, and it will sort of ring familiar for you guys in Canada as well. You know, it's sort of a series of unfortunate events and timings and COVID and everything. I mean, I think it didn't help that we've been through a bit of a rough patch on the relationship in amongst all of that. But if you go all the way back to 2018, which was the last sort of prime minister visit when Theresa May was the prime minister. You know, she came out, she had a very successful visit. You know, it was kind of a sort of continuity visit, you know, after the sort of heady times of the golden era of David Cameron, George Osborne, and, you know, huge volumes of Chinese investment going into the UK. You know, that China was very much a core focus for the government at that time. Theresa May came in as prime minister, and it was more of a continuity. It was less golden era type rhetoric and more sort of, look, China's an important relationship. Let's sustain this relationship. Funnily enough, 8 years later, we've come back to that exact same position, the Theresa May sort of position, right? It's kind of, we're not too hot, we're not too cold, we're somewhere in the middle. And I think that's quite a sensible place for the UK to position the relationship. It's actually a position that is quite similar to other European countries. So you look at the French, the German, the Italian, it's very similar. And I think, you know, Canada, Australia also moving into that sort of similar sort of place. And I think, you know, it's the right place to position the relationship. You know, I mean, for the UK, we have three major trading partners. We have Europe, we have North America, US, Canada, and we have China. Those are the big three. And this is exactly how the government is, it, you know, frames our global trading and investment relationships. And I think it's the visits obviously helped to put China back on the map in terms of, you know, we started the process of re-engagement in summer of 2024, right? So this is not sort of flash in the pan, you know, it's just sort of happened sort of thing. It's been building up to this moment over a course of about 18 months. And we had the foreign secretary came out first, then we had the chancellor and the resumption of high-level dialogues, like the economic and financial dialogue. We had our trade business minister came out last year as well, resumption of the trade dialogue that we have between MOFCOM and the Department of Business and Trade. We had our energy minister, we had our science and technology minister. It was very much a kind of, let's build back all the sort of foundations of the relationship, all the different mechanisms that exist at government level, and then we'll bring in the prime minister. Whereas I think other countries work the other way around. So Australia, their approach was to send Albanese out, you know, almost pretty much a few months after he was elected as prime minister in Australia. And he was on a plane to Shanghai and Beijing. He's now done two visits since he's been elected prime minister. Whereas for the UK, we just the approach has been to sort of build back up to that moment. And as you know, with China, you know, if you're not engaging the top leader, you know, really you're not fully engaged. So ultimately, this visit has signed off that re-engagement process, and you could say we're now, you know, fully re-engaged.
And I am going to ask you a question about, did we get that full reset? But I do want to go back just a little bit, because I think what you mentioned about kind of like this has been 18 months in building, right? And this does come on the heels of the Mark Carney visit from Canada, our prime minister here. Mm. And it does come on the heels of a lot of blowback out of the US, right? And, you know, he's kind of been running around slinging at everybody. And can we say that there's maybe even some extra motivation? I'll put you on the spot and then you can walk it back. And these are my words, not yours for sure. But is there some action of like, you know what, maybe we should all work a little extra hard on the decoupling and look at this hard from the US as a trade partner? We don't know where this is going to go. We hope there's future elections, but that is very much amorphous at best right now. We don't know what's going to happen. I think especially for Canada, and I'm speaking from a lot of the Canadian lens of like, holy cow, I think we've been just too much in one pot for too long, too many eggs in one basket. This is dangerous. And now we see it. Is there any of that potentially spurring things along from the UK side?
I'd say the UK position is quite different because our major trading partner is Europe, but by quite a considerable distance. And then the US is our sort of second largest. And I think, you know, as I say, I think those are the three core markets. And the current government, the Keir Starmer government, has been very committed to restoring all three back to where they should be. So actually, over the last 18 months, the priority was Europe, really kind of resetting the relationship with Europe. And that's also why they've, I think, put China somewhat to the side for the prime minister anyway, and let the ministers, the chancellor, you know, reestablish all these different mechanisms and so forth, and then bring in the prime minister when we feel, you know, it's the right time to do that. And I think also, you know, to a large extent, a lot of it comes down to scheduling, you know, and you know, we do a lot of work with the embassy. This is obviously their work, the government work. But, you know, finding an appropriate time in the calendar to do a visit like this, it'll be exactly the same for the Canadians with Carney. You know, believe it or not, you know, that's actually one of the biggest challenges, is getting agreement on both sides on when to actually do a visit. And, you know, if there might be many reasons in the background that are affecting that decision. And for example, you know, you'll have seen the news around the decision on the Chinese embassy, new embassy project in London. You know, so, you know, things like that can have an effect on when a visit can take place. And, you know, every country has its own version of these sorts of issues. So I think, but at the same time, I think when it comes to diversification, that's certainly a word that you hear a lot of when it comes to diversifying trade, diversifying investment. That's certainly, you know, I think, yeah, it's certainly there in the background, I think. And then at the same time, I think there's a recognition of China's unique qualities when it comes to certain types of technology, certain types of, you know, companies that really, like the battery sector or wind turbines, solar, these sorts of areas where, you know, really the supply chains now are very much concentrated in China. So in many ways, if you're trying to green your economy, and the UK is certainly very committed to its net zero objectives, you kind of have to be working with China. And that was actually even the foreign secretary when he came on as the first sort of cabinet minister to come to China after the general election in 2024. His message was, you know, China is a clean energy superpower. The UK, you know, is aspiring to be a clean energy company, you know, a net zero nation. We must be working together. And so that was kind of underpinning, I think, the initial re-engagement. But then also this secondary point is the growth agenda. So, you know, as the world's second largest economy, you know, one of our third largest trading partner, you know, it has to be a fixture. Certainly, I think for the US dynamic, there is, you know, I'm sure the UK government is conscious of you know, views out of Washington. But as you can see with the visit, you know, they're not letting that get in the way of, you know, progressing a relationship with an important partner.
Exactly. And we can't be worried about how that's perceived in the U.S. either, because sometimes it's just not taken well that these exploratory talks happen. It's unfortunate. Now, back to what I was saying earlier, did the visit achieve, in your opinion, a reset in the relationship? And I'm not trying to assume or say that it needed a reset. So reset is probably the wrong word, but I'll leave it there for now.
Yeah, we tend to avoid using the word reset because, yeah, for us, it's been more of a process of re-engagement because, you know, the relationship was always there. And, you know, despite the G2G not being fully engaged, fully active, you know, below the surface, there was a, you know, very healthy, very active relationship, and, you know, Chinese student numbers, very strong trade investment, you know, was certainly continuing. But I think, you know, a visit like this, you know, Chinese culture, and you know the way that the system works here. You know, if you're not meeting with the top guy, you know, really the relationship is missing that sort of upper third, you know, that is all critical, really. And we can already feel, you know, even just, you know, a week or so after the visit, the sense of kind of winds in our sails, you know, at our backs in terms of our partners and the people that we're speaking to on the Chinese side who are saying, well, okay, now the UK is, you know, very much back in the fold. We, you know, let's take forward any of the things that we would like to take forward with the UK, whether that's on sort of on the trade negotiation side, whether that's on delegations from China going to the UK, whether that's local governments looking at, okay, which countries should be prioritized working with this year on activity in China or overseas. So I think that's it's very constructive from that standpoint. And, you know, what's been interesting to see is that the Chinese state media coverage, which, again, officials, SOE, state-owned enterprises, and private sector too, you know, they take a lot of their cues from the state media. The state media has been very sort of favorable of the visit and of, you know, I think Starmer in general. And that all sort of, that's all supportive. And then I think from the international media, I think there's actually been also quite a fair degree of coverage. You know, I think people recognize that 8 years is just, it's ridiculous, really, you know, for a prime minister not to have visited Beijing, I think.
To that market, yeah.
For a market like China, exactly. And so I don't think people were necessarily critical of the actual, you know, visit to China itself. I think where people perhaps have been poking at it is on sort of its deliverables and outcomes. But actually, my view is the outcomes were actually quite substantial. And the context on that is really important, because obviously the UK left the European Union in 2016. And for the first sort of few years coming out of the EU, the focus was very much on the EU, right? Renegotiating our relationship with Brussels. And then you have COVID. And then after COVID, you have this sort of a bit of a drift with the China relationship for about 2 years, because the previous government just didn't have the interest in doing much with China. You know, the prime minister wasn't able to come out here. The cabinet was completely divided on China. There was only one cabinet minister who came out in those 2 years, and that was the foreign secretary, James Cleverly, who I think, you know, was quite had a successful visit, but there was no follow through. You know, it was just on his own kind of coming out to China. So I think you can all through that time, the UK hasn't really been proactively fully engaged on its trade relationship with China. You know, when it comes to negotiating market access, trade policy, we've effectively only been doing it for 18 months. And that's not just 18 months in the last 8 years, that's 18 months in the history of the UK and the PRC, effectively, right? Because we've been in the EU since the 70s, right? So prior, you know, if we were thinking of market access, we'd do it all through Brussels. This includes CBBC, right? So we would defer all that for the European Commission. So I think, you know, you can see it in the embassy. They've expanded their trade policy team. They now have about sort of 15 people. We've completely redesigned our operation as well, so that we've got policy, trade policy people, and within our team, we've now got about 4 people just doing policy. And it's all part of the UK taking its own independent trade relationship with China forward. And the outcomes, you know, in given it's only been 18 months, we've got reduction in tariff on whiskey from 10% to 5%. And bear in mind, this whiskey reduction applies to Canada as well as the UK. So we've negotiated the reduction, but everyone gets to benefit from it, which is nice. So Japanese, Canadian, US, you know, whiskey all has that reduction to 5%. And then at the same time, We've negotiated market access on a number of areas, so in seafood and others.
I want to ask you about that. Like I would like to actually get into some of the specific agreements, announcements from the trip, talk about which ones are the most significant. And I do hope that you can throw in the visa-free travel, which is phenomenal. That's just really cool. Or even talking about tariff reduction. So yeah, please continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you make a very important point. I think, you know, on the sort of economic outcomes, you know, there's a great list, and I can go through that. On the sort of political outcomes, you've got two big ones. So yeah, first day visa-free travel, which Canada also has received, but like us, not yet implemented. But I think our belief is that Canada, the UK will be batched together. There might be even other countries that are put into that batch. And there'll be an announcement at some point.
Well, like the Commonwealth relationship and the whole, like it.
Yeah, and we've seen it.
We're often lumped together.
Exactly. And we've seen it throughout the last sort of 2 years of, you know, China adding countries to this visa-free travel list that sometimes they'll batch up and things like this. And so I think it's, and we always knew that it would require the Prime Minister coming to Beijing for us to be added to that list. You know, it was very much a pattern over the last 2 years. And you know, Carney coming also triggered that same reaction. And, you know, and China very much wants to get, you know, travel and tourists from overseas back to China. So it's very much in their interest as well. And, you know, and I think if you speak to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and others here, they, you know, they want to increase understanding of China. They want to, and tourism is a great way to do that, especially you're bringing over business people, bringing over young people, you know, just to sort of experience what China is all about, and just take the edge off, you know, perhaps some of the perception of China that has kind of, you know, grown over the years in the West. So I think the visa-free travel was certainly a big one. The other one on the political side was the removal of sanctions of UK MPs and peers. There was a group of MPs and peers who had been sanctioned for quite some time, actually, at least 3 years. And those sanctions were removed. So that was quite a big step also. And I think, you know, in many ways, yeah, that re-engagement or you know, reset, I think is a fair word to use. We just tend to avoid using it because we know the UK government prefers not to use it.
Well, it's not accurate.
Yeah, exactly. It's not accurate when you apply it to the whole relationship. You know, there may be little bits that you can apply it, but you know, it certainly helps, I think, to the removal of sanctions. It was a big step for sure, clearing the road a bit. And so, and then on the economic side, you know, I mentioned the whiskey reduction, market access for seafood, so crawfish, market access, and a few other things as well. But the big ones really, I think, were setting milestones for future negotiations that we hope to take place further down the line. So the big one for the UK is market access for trade and services. The UK economy is 85% services. And when you look at our exports to China and Hong Kong combined, about 40-45% of our exports are services versus goods. But services will be growing at a much faster rate and actually operate. We have a significant surplus on services. And so if we're ever going to sort of close the trade deficit that we have with China, services are going to have to play a big role in that. And so there was there were two agreements signed between at the government-to-government level that are focused on trade and services and trying to open up the bilateral service trade. So that's quite exciting, and that's certainly something for us at CBBC we'll be focusing a lot of our energy on over the coming years to see if we can make some significant progress in that space. And in that space, you're thinking, okay, it's financial services, you know, banking, asset management, insurance, pensions, all these different areas, which obviously the UK has quite a strong foothold in China that, you know, is somewhat unique, you know, because of HSBC and Standard Chartered, the footprint that we have here is substantial. But then you also have companies like Schroders and Fidelity and Aberdeen and Daly Gifford who've got operations in China and are managing funds and managing capital, whether it's foreign capital or domestic. And then you've got, as I say, life insurance, pensions, and all these other areas as well. And then on the professional services side, so the law firms, accounting firms, the creative industries, you know, advertising agencies and others. We have, you know, again, a substantial footprint there. So trying to move all that forward to the next level. And it fits very well with China's next five-year plan. So a big part of the next five-year plan will be to try and stimulate domestic consumption, and high-end services are seen as being a big driver of that domestic consumption. So we're, again, in conversations we're having with local governments. So actually I'm flying to Shanghai this evening for a meeting tomorrow morning with one of the vice mayors of Shanghai. And we'll go in with a group of our companies, and trade and services will very much be a core fixture because, yeah, the Chinese government sees the UK as being a trade and services, you know, in my words, trade and services superpower. You know, we do excel in services. And they see us as being a big part of that next phase in China's development. Whereas, you know, obviously Japanese and German investors and companies were very much the industrials, and over the last sort of 20, 30 years, a big part of China's development. You know, perhaps it's the UK who might sort of find ourselves more at the forefront over the next sort of 10, 20 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. You mentioned it a little bit, you know, that trip down to Shanghai, which inspires me to want to ask, what was CBBC's role during the trip of Sir Keir Starmer?
Yeah, we had quite a special role, actually. I think we, first of all, you know, we were sort of working with HMG on a lot of the trade policy side of things. So we've been pushing the whiskey tariff reduction and market access on all these areas for the last sort of, well, 2 years or so, 2-3 years. The whiskey tariff actually was only raised about 18 months ago, but yet we've been pushing that one for since then. And so helping on that side. So if we get a chance to go in and see MOFCOM, or we get a chance to go in and see different ministries, we're raising these issues. So, and that's obviously all in coordination with what the government is doing. And it helps to have that sort of business voice and government voice working in unison. But then for the actual visit itself, we were the UK Secretariat for the what's called the UK-China Business Council. It sounds a lot like our name, but it was previously what was called the UK-China CEO Council. And quite a few different countries, when they have bilateral exchanges like we had last week, will have CEO roundtables, or I think the French call it a business council, as well as, you know, similar to what we call it this time. And essentially what that is we've got about 50 CEOs on both sides. So the good and the great of British and Chinese industry. And we organize a half day forum at the Great Hall of the People in two parts. Speakers like Richard Liu from JD was on one of our panels. We had Lei Jun from Xiaomi. We had Pascal Soriot from AstraZeneca, you know, a real sort of a star-studded kind of lineup. Something that for us is quite special in, you know, a real sort of highlight for our work in recent years. And then the second part, we then had Premier Li Qiang and the Prime Minister join us and deliver speeches as well. So yeah, quite a special day. And that was in the afternoon, which followed the morning meetings, which were between the Prime Minister and President Xi, which I, you know, overran and seemed to have gone very well. And then the government signings were all sort of part of that morning session. So yeah, it was a big day for us, and we're really happy with how it went. And then we also supported the visit in Shanghai as well. So we ran a UK China business forum in Shanghai on the Saturday morning on day three. And again, you know, it was great just to bring our community together. British, Chinese companies are investing in the UK. You know, again, a really strong lineup of speakers and things. So, it was quite intense. I'll be honest. It was, you know, January was a total blur. You know, it was long days.
I was just going to ask you. I've been through things like this where I felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. So I was just going to ask you how anxious and burning the candle at both ends were you leading up to it, and how relieved are you now that it's over?
Well, I think what helped was that because there was so much going on, there wasn't any time to be anxious or second guess, or it was just
like, I suppose,
constantly moving on to the next thing. I don't think I've ever had it where my phone was just ringing constantly. It was quite intense, because obviously a lot of our members, you know, they've got their CEOs coming out. They want everything to run smoothly. They see us as sort of obviously a go-to, one of the organizations involved in the planning. And we want to make sure that everything runs smoothly for them too, right? So our members are British companies. Their CEOs are very important stakeholders for us. So we want to make sure that all runs nice and smooth. Meanwhile, the government side is focusing very much on the government side. So we're kind of taking care of the business side. And so it was a great experience, and it's the sort of thing that I think brings you a lot closer to the people that you work with. So whether that's with the British Embassy here, whether it's with our members, or whether it's with the Chinese side as well, we work very closely with MOFCOM and different partners on the Chinese side, and I think, you know, you certainly bond through that experience, because, you know, effectively when we all came back from sort of Christmas, New Year, sort of early January, we had roughly 4 weeks to pull the whole thing together. There had been some work done previously, and then we only really had the green light that the visit was going to take place on the sort of 21st of January.
You don't get a lot of lead time.
Don't get a lot of lead time, exactly. And now you can build as much. You build as much as you can, right, up until that point. But until you've got that green light, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can't really do. So then when that happens, then everything gets into real overdrive. But it was great. And, you know, there's some fantastic people working on the project across the UK government, Chinese government. So very happy with it. And yeah, and I think in some ways it was, you know, one of those things where, like, yeah, obviously the visit itself only takes place over 3 days, and so it finishes and then you're rested, but then you still got that adrenaline running through, so the following week you're like you just keep going. So I was down in Suzhou in Shanghai the following week for more meetings, and again, just sort of, it's great for us at CBBC because as I say, a lot of our partners suddenly put the UK to the top of the list in terms of people they want to engage and want to work with. You know, we were in to see the chair of one of China's biggest banks, you know, the week after, and you know, they're looking at supporting their clients investing overseas and doing more with the UK. So it's all very helpful.
Yes. So for those watching on YouTube, you can see that I think I'm a little ahead on the gray that comes with these types of experiences than Tom does. I've probably got a few years on him though, so that's why. And I know that things like this, they can, especially for an organization like yours, they're probably going to create more work, not less. Like, and so even though all that work leading up to and getting the trip done was great, but I know, even, you know, from my experiences of when I, you know, we had all our investments and all our startups, and we would take them on these big road shows and invite all the investors and media, and we tour and all this kind of stuff. And so we'd be done with this kind of fundraising tours that we would take them on. But then after, it's the follow-ups, it's the meetings, it's the documentation, it's the legal, like it was just, it did not, it just created so much more work, maybe less high profile, so not as nerve wracking, but certainly voluminous, for sure. But you know, that's good. One other fun question. I was asked to ask this, and I don't know why. So you're going to have to tell me why I'm even asking this, but was it the CBBC that recommended the Yunnan restaurant that Starmer ate at?
So we didn't recommend it, but if we were asked, it would be on my recommendation list because it's a great restaurant. I know very well. It's a restaurant called In-N-Out.
Why am I asking this?
Well, is it that good? It's a great restaurant. It's like Yunnan food, right? So Yunnan food's always good, but it's a particularly popular restaurant. And Starmer was there with the entire CEO delegation, right? So you got about 60 people turn up at this Yunnan restaurant in the north of Sanlitun. And there's other people dining, right? So they didn't pick out the entire thing. And of course, people are taking photos. And next thing you know, the whole thing goes viral. And so, I think it was a nice thing to do, I think, because it's just a normal restaurant. And great food. So next time you're in Beijing, definitely check it out.
Oh, man. You know, even just hearing the word Sanlitun, it just... that takes me back. That was such a, like, or being in the Hutongs or something. Like, it's just, I have not been back in any reasonable amount of time. And that just draws me. And I was, like, I told you before, I spent 5 years in Dalian. And I don't even know if it's a cuisine. I've always just said the Dongbei Zai. Like, I am a big, like, lover. It's where I fell in love with eggs and tomatoes, you know. It's just the simplest things, but I miss it. That just hit me hard for some reason. So, but anyway, moving on, nobody cares about that. From your work, what kinds of challenges and opportunities are UK companies still facing on the ground in China that you're working to help resolve?
Yeah, so I think on sort of the policy side, you know, there's always areas that we are trying to make progress on in terms of market access. Whether that's helping companies to acquire new licensees or ability to operate certain types of company. That's certainly a core front for us, particularly in the trade and services side of things. At a local government level, and one of the reasons I'm in Shanghai tomorrow, we do a lot to help our companies to engage with local government. And when local government, the kind of issues that we're addressing are much more practical issues. So it could be that, for example, it's a company that's trying to expand a factory and they need to acquire the land next door from the local government and in order to do that. So they might want to raise that through us with the vice mayor or vice governor or whoever it might be, or they've bought a new machine that goes into their factory and they need to get a permit to operate this machinery. It's a machine that perhaps is quite unique to China, these sorts of situations you'll know very well. We help all kinds of scenarios like that over the course of the year. I think it really helps us to sort of build a very close relationship with the local government. Local governments are great here. They're very practical minded. They have metrics where solving problems is something that they're there to do, right? For investors, whether that's domestic or foreign investors. And they can achieve things that are pretty remarkable. Like we had one company who had to move a reasonable sized factory, about 400 people sized factory, from one district of a city to another district. Because the old factory was now in a sort of quite high residential area, and it was time to move to the more industrial, the new industrial zone in the city. And obviously for the company, it's a concern. They're like, well, this is, you know, we're going to lose the productivity of the plant, and, you know, we're worried about how that's going to go. But the local government says, okay, you can keep your old factory operating. Don't worry. Just keep running as normal. We'll help you build a new one in the other district and help manage that transition across. And they completed the project in 15 months. And this was during COVID. And so the management are doing all this from long distance, and the local team is there on the ground. Incredible, right? And so I think
speed of China.
China's, that's, you know, China speed, and, you know, when they want to get something done, they'll get it done. And yeah, so I think local governments here are they're great to work with, and some of the best at what they do.
It's unreal what you can get done when there's such a lack of red tape.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's that top down, and it's kind of been announced, and you talked about this and how eager the entire country, companies, local dignitaries, what have you, want to impress, and they want to follow. They have such belief in their leadership. And when something is announced, or it seems like, you know, she wants to do this, that, or the other, or likes this or likes that or whatever, whew, mountains are moved to start making things like that happen. Incredible headwinds. Tailwinds.
No, absolutely. I think it's sort of another key tailwind that we're seeing that I think will be part of this kind of what comes next from the PM visit is I buy an investment from China. So it's definitely entering into a new phase, and it's a phase that it's very top down supported. So it's got that green light of approval from the top. And it's, you know, very much about sort of Chinese EV companies, batteries, renewables, but actually a much, much broader set, you know, range of sectors to sort of go global, which is the sort of the name of the policy. And it'll be a big fixture also in the next 5-year plan is this go global strategy. And it's quite different from the previous sort of going out in waves of investment, because I think that the central government wants to learn from a lot of the mistakes of the past, and they want to make sure that this next wave, next phase, is done in a sort of sustainable manner, and is done in a way where, you know, companies are not just taking on huge amounts of debt. They're not just, you know, they're not behaving in ways that are upsetting the host countries of their investments. They're doing it in a way that's you know, they're compliant with very highly compliant governance standards are strong. All these sorts of things. And so it's a sort of responsible investor type mentality, and all to create a sense of kind of orderliness to the process. And so I think that's very positive. I think it's good, the right way to do things. And I think, you know, for a market like the UK, it's exactly how we like our investors to be. And I think, you know, hopefully what we'll see is a gradual uptick of FDI from China into the UK. And into sectors that the UK is certainly, you know, as part of our own industrial strategy, is looking to attract investment from. So I think there's a lot of complementarity that we see for Chinese investment into the UK over the coming years, and also complementarity on that trading front as well, as I mentioned, with the trade and services side.
Yeah, no, I love that for you guys. I am fingers crossed. I really hope that all works out for you.
Thank you.
Couple of quick ones. You know, Tom, thank you so much for all your time. You've given us a ton. I want to be conscious of your time. Couple of quick questions to wrap this up. Looking ahead, what are some priority areas where you see the greatest potential for the UK-China commercial cooperation over the next few years?
Yeah, so I think, yeah, you know, certainly what I just mentioned on trade and services is a big one in China in terms of UK investment here. I think pharmaceuticals and biotech as well. You know, one of the big deals announced during the PM visit was a commitment by AstraZeneca to invest $15 billion into China over the next 4 years, roughly up until 2030. And the reason they're doing that is because they see the R&D strengths that China has, and they want the R&D strengths of China to be part of its global business. And you know, if you're a pharmaceutical CEO and you come to China and you see everything's brand new, the labs are all like, you know, world class, the local governments are really supportive, you've got local companies that are becoming increasingly competitive, and so, you know, drug discovery, things like this. So,
well, technology is top notch, like the equipment is top notch, and there is so much educated talent that knows how to use it well.
100%. The talent is such a big factor in all of this. And I think, you know, if you see a local company, it's a fast moving, fast growing company, they've discovered a new drug, the talent's like top notch. Well, if you're a big group, a big pharma group, you invest into that company. Maybe you even acquire that company, or maybe you work with them to help take their drug global, international. So that's very much a lot of the deals that we're seeing in that space. Whether that's from GSK or AstraZeneca, are molded in those sorts of shapes. So it's acquisitions, or it's working with local companies to take their drugs international. So I think that's definitely a very interesting front. And then, as I say, I think on the Chinese investment into the UK side of things, we're quite excited about where that could go. I think there's still a bit of work to be done to get to where we need to be, because I think what we're seeing already is that there's a lot of Chinese companies who are making steps to open offices in London, starting to build out teams, but it's still quite sort of, it's a little bit cautious, a little bit careful. They're sort of watching, you know, how the political winds kind of, you know, start to move. And I think the next phase, hopefully we start to see larger commitments in terms of investing into factories, investing into more significant operations. And from all of that, we'll then see job creation. And actually what's interesting about this type of investment is that, yes, okay, you might be setting up your UK head office or your European head office in London, but the operations are all going to be across the UK. And they could be in Scotland, they could be in the north of England. So places that are really crying out for investment. And so I think it's actually, as I say, for the UK, a very healthy opportunity long term, and very complementary to what we need.
Exactly. So much to say there. But again, I got to bite my tongue. Now, finally, for all our UK business leaders who are listening, who may still be a little bit uncertain about China's market, what's your 60-second elevator pitch, so to speak? What's the message you would want them to take away from what you witnessed and learned about this trip?
Absolutely. Okay, so I think the big thing really is, you know, we encourage people to come out to China, you know, and one of the things that we're looking to do over the next 3 to 4 months.
Come visit,
you know, and come with us. And we're organizing 6 delegations over the course of April, May and June. We're going to places like Chongqing, which is now a sort of a viral sensation as a sort of cyberpunk city. But then also Hangzhou, center of China's robotics industry, DeepSeek, mm-hmm. was founded in Hangzhou, Alibaba, exactly. So we'll be visiting all those companies. We'll be in all the sort of key cities and parts of China. And we've built this program very much with bringing UK companies who haven't yet got connections in China, haven't yet really experienced what's going on here, bringing those guys out here. So I think, you know, my message would be, you know, allocate some time and come out and spend a week in China and just see it for yourself, because
you'd absolutely love it. I'm geared up. I want to go. It's just get your boots on the ground. You need boots on the ground, but you also need a Sherpa.
Exactly.
And you're the Sherpa.
Exactly. And we can help you get to the point where you can get the boots on the ground, and you can work with all different types of partners, and WPIC as well, you know, great partner to work with here. And so, yeah, I think, you know, we get that a lot of companies, when they look at the global markets and this UK business in particular, you look at Europe, you look at the US, yeah, okay, probably easier to reach markets, you know, but at the same time, so much of the future of the global economy is being defined and built in China. You've really got to be part of what's going on here. It's got a fixture in your mind.
I can't back that strongly enough, because you might be able to take your brand and maybe your title with that brand, and there's a lot of markets, Western markets, countries you can go to, and that's all the cachet you need to open all the doors. That does not work in China. It doesn't work that way. You need a recommendation. You need an in, right? You'll need the help. You just won't be able to walk in and you won't know really even who you're meeting with. It will be somebody down the chain and you will have to work your way up unless you get together with the CBBC who knows how it works, what the game's like, who you actually need to be meeting with, because you guys know who everybody is and the type of power that they or may not wield. It is uber important and it's not to be missed. And you're going to have a gas and you're going to have amazing food and you're going to see amazing things. I could not agree more. Tom, tomorrow you're headed to Shanghai. Are you going by train or are you going by plane?
I'm flying. Yeah. But the train is increasingly, I sort of divide between the two, depending on what my route is or my timings are. But the train just got faster. Yeah. They turned it up another notch in January. So now you can do it.
So it's doing like 350K?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they have the 5G, so you can actually get some work done and do phone calls.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. I was a big fan. I was a big convert. I stopped, you know, flying, you know, from an hour and a half outside Beijing to an hour outside Shanghai. And I avoided all of that. I was super happy to just like go to the train station 20 minutes early and boom, be on my way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun. I love that. If you know, you know, people going to China. Yeah, the default to fly everywhere is not the same when you get to China. Tom Simpson, Managing Director of China Operations and China Chief Representative for the China-Britain Business Council, CBBC. Thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciated it.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for those of you who are following along. Don't be afraid to give us a like, a thought, a comment, a guest recommendation, some advice. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up at podcast@wpic.co. And yes, if you can subscribe or what have you around wherever you're getting your podcasts, we really appreciate that because the algorithms really appreciate that. But for me, from Tom, and for everybody at the negotiation team, thank you very much for listening and or watching. And we will see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.